people are ripping chairs out, throwing it on the field.
Do you get out of the arena with that?
No, not a chance.
Well, I saw a tweet from Bob Nightingale saying that security guards were chasing a guy with a seat last night. So I don't, but I didn't get an update. It's I don't know if that guy escaped or not.
I feel like it's one of those things where you have to do it as like a group, right? Like if enough of us do this, they can't stop us all, right?
And then they do get one or two.
Yeah, like one of you two, you get screwed. But then in the end, like a lot of other people get to bring those crappy chairs home.
Right. It's a crappy chair.
Right.
It's a weird thing. It's like, yeah, let's take this seat from the Oakland Coliseum. That
I mean, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, I haven't really loved anything enough to try to do that, so.
Oh, it's too bad. You got to love a baseball park just enough to steal seats from it.
Well, that's not true. I mean, I guess I love my children enough. We have a lock of our oldest son's hair kept in a bag somewhere, so there you go.
All right, a little weird. Here we go.
It's first haircut.
The first bite.
All right. Here's how I want to start this. I want to go through the timeline of what I think happened with Matthew Sliuca and UNLV football. And nice. You can tell me where you think I'm wrong, I've assumed something, whatever it is. So back in January or February, Brennan Marion, UNLV's offensive coordinator, told Matthew Sliuca, Sluka's dad, Sluka's agent, maybe all three, that he would get him $100,000 if he came to UNLV. How serious that conversation was, don't know. But some point, the Slukas thought they were getting $100,000 because Brennan Marion told them that. And either Marion was just flippantly saying it, which seems kind of stupid if you're going to flippantly throw out a number and then not actually try to do it. Or Marion was serious about it, but never really checked with Barry Odom and the UNLV NIL right. collective. Or he did. They said no, and Marion just never went back to
Forgot.
Sluka. So somehow there's a communication breakdown, and I think Brennan Marion's at the center of it.
Well, yeah, I mean,
back in January or February,
I would think that, like you said, there's different ways to do it. Like he looked passionately in their eyes and was like, "I will give you $100,000 if you come to UNLV," or the discussion was, as it always is, like, "Hey, if we're going to come, what's the NIL look like? You know, we're you know he's a quarterback. What can we get?" And it's more of like a, "Yeah, I mean, I think maybe 100." And then he like walks out the door and they're like, "We're going to Vegas," right? Like there's something there that is that disconnect,
right.
But I would agree with the timeline thus far.
Some sort of communication breakdown with Brennan Marion.
Yeah.
Then Sluka finished his degree at Holy Cross. So he didn't come to UNLV until August. So I buy the idea that they didn't think about it, do anything about it from January until August.
I don't.
You think they should have been doing something between January and August?
If you're a competent agent who is representing him, you're at the very least communicating with them for that sum of money.
Okay.
So, when you get there, let's have this
right.
settled and let's
right.
have this ready to go. You don't do everything, then show up for work and be like, "Yeah, cool. So what's going on, guys?" And go through spring, whatever. Like, I know we're going to get to this, but like that's, to me, at the center of a lot of this is poor representation for Sluka.
Right. And we'll get to the agent, but I do think from, like, Matthew Sluka personally, I understand why Sluka from January to August.
Sure, you're trusting the powers that be.
Would have not said anything, thought anything about this payment that didn't end up happening. Then we get to August, and I don't really know what would have kicked it off, but that's where we started getting reporting from ESPN and Yahoo yesterday that the agent started asking the collective. The collective even said the first time they heard from the agent was in August. So I'm guessing, my assumption here, is that Sluka gets to UNLV in August. There's no money. There's no payment. And he's like, "Hey, what's up?" And so the agent starts like saying, "Hey, where's Matthew Sluka's money?" And then according to the Slukas, UNLV's collective was kind of leading them on. And his dad said that they were like, "Wait until classes start. Wait until the games start. I will figure it out at some point." And never did. And then we get to the Kansas game. And ESPN had the report on this, that Sluka's agent confronted one of the members of the NIL collective in the tunnel after they beat Kansas. The member of the NIL collective was like, "Let's set up a phone call and figure this out." The following week, there's a phone call that includes Barry Odom with the agent. And during that phone call, the agent said he was willing to negotiate down off the $100,000 to $50,000 and then even to $25,000, and the UNLV was only willing to offer $12,000, $3,000 over the course of 4 months, or spread out each 4 months. And UNLV said no to, or excuse me, Sluka said no to that, and then he quit.
Sounds about right.
Okay.
I mean, so I think there's some really big, like, obviously, blank spots in all of this, which is, first off, you know, when you're reaching out to the collective to ask about your money, then this goes back to the disconnect in terms of what the offer was. I mean, you knew to reach out to the said collective and where to find them, so maybe that the conversation was serious. Maybe it was like, hey, we'll give you the $100,000. This is where you like this is who you talk to, whatever it is. But again, I would think representation, you're taking care of that kind of stuff, reaching out to the powers that be for your client leading up to it. You know, again, because it so his agent Cromartie was on SiriusXM yesterday. I listened to the whole interview, and one of the things he says is like, well, we can't sign anything until you're enrolled. Okay, but the natural follow-up is, yeah, but that doesn't mean you can't craft anything until he's there. Yeah, he can't sign on the dotted line, but you as the agent can get the paperwork together and talk to the powers that be so that when he enrolls, he can sign it. I think that's a failure of representation, and again, going back to how solid was the actual offer. I also think, to your point about the alleged, hey, we're willing to come off of this, if it was really $100,000, why would you be willing to come off of it?
That's bad negotiating.
Right.
Like, that's pretty brutal.
Yes. If you were legitimately offered the deal that you say you were offered, I wouldn't come off of $100,000. I would demand $100,000.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in negotiations personally, and I've said, like, hey, what happened to this? Oh, no. No, then I want that. Like, no. So that, to me, I don't know if that's, again, going back to just poor representation, if that is a sign of maybe they know that the offer was not as solid, and so they're trying to negotiate it down to get some sort of money. I think that whole aspect is a little fishy to me. If you were offered a solid offer of $100,000 for Sluka services, why would you then be willing to come off of that if they jilted you in the first 2 months, 2.5 months that you've been here? That, to me, makes no sense.
One thing from the text line, Matthew says he didn't have an agent when the deal was made in February.
Okay.
I thought the same thing, but in ESPN story, Bob Sluka, Sluka's dad, told ESPN that Brennan Marion and the agents from Equity Sports,
yes,
agreed to a verbal deal in the winter.
And Cromartie corroborated that in the interview with SiriusXM, said that he was part of that, yeah, in February.
So,
and named Marion himself.
Whether or not it was Cromartie at the time or a different agent or whatever, both sides have, or excuse me, the Sluka side has said that agent was part of the situation in February when they agreed to, or didn't agree to, whatever the hell happened there, $100,000. Now, I want to ask you this. The Slukas have accused Barry Odom of an NCAA violation by saying that he directly was part of the negotiation for Sluka's NIL. And we know that Blueprint Sports, the company that runs UNLV's collective, they said yesterday that they were negotiating a $3,000 per month payment to Matthew Sluka.
Mm-hmm.
So we, both sides have said there was some conversation about $3,000 per month. Now, obviously, the UNLV side, the collective side, is saying they were doing it, whereas the Sluka side says Odom was directly involved. I don't know what level of proof there would have to be. Is Barry Odom in any trouble for this? Because a coach is not supposed to directly negotiate or talk about the NIL money they're paying a player.
I mean, he could be, but again, I think it comes down to the burden of proof. I mean, okay, where's the proof that this actually happened?
This one supposedly happened on a phone call.
Right.
So, in theory,
you could record it.
Did
I
they
guess.
Figure out, hey, we didn't get anything in writing the first time, they're screwing us over, let's hit record on this phone call?
I mean, given the steps that this agent representation has taken, I'm going to go on a limb and say probably not, that they're not smart enough to do that. I mean, in all seriousness, like, this is, because at the center of all this is some mishandling from Sluka's side as well. Like, this is how you get to this point without having anything solid in writing for your person is insane, right?
Yeah.
That's absolutely insane. So I would not trust that they were maybe smart enough to think ahead and maybe do something like that. So maybe he could be in trouble. I'd also, for anybody out there, I'm going to go on a limb and say, if it is true, he's probably not the only coach that's doing that around the country. So, right.
He would be the only one that wasn't doing it.
Right. So, he could be, but unless you have some sort of proof, yeah, that's the case. Like, the collective, in, I think it was the Yahoo Sports or was it Thamel, said, like, hey, we've got emails, at least when it came to the negotiation of this, like, $3,000. Yeah. So we'll see maybe if those come out. But I would assume you need some sort of proof if he's going to be in trouble for that instead of just, he did it.
I think ultimately this the fault here comes down to two main people, Brennan Marion and the agent.
Yeah.
Like, I think those are the two people that – whatever happened, I don't know if anything was nefarious on Brennan Marion's side. Like, I don't know if it was, hey, I'm just going to tell him this and then not, we're just not going to do it. And we're going to call his bluff that, hey, you're here, you're not going to quit now. And then he did. Or if it was yeah, the casual, we can try to get $100,000, and then just dropped it from there. The one thing about that, though, is I guess maybe if they never ask, you never bring it back up. But if you're Brendan Marion, and you even if you just casually drop $100,000 and the kid commits, you just completely blow that off as the coach. You don't ever be like, hey, we got to get this kid some money.
Well, again, that goes back to, right, like the whole entire process of what the conversation was like in this whole – and the other – like, what doesn't make sense to me either is, you know, if you're – again, if you're somebody who allegedly, like, these to other teams were in, like, Saluka had some offers, could have gone anywhere, except we chose to be here. Again, like, you would need that – you want that solidly in writing when you're talking about it. And when it comes to the conversation of that and from Marion's perspective, I can understand a situation where you're talking about it and you're like, yeah, I think maybe we can try to get like up to 100. We'll see what we can do. But then when there's no follow up about anything from, again, the side that is representing the person that you're bringing in, right? Maybe those conversations weren't as serious, and the other NIL aspect that you already discussed was fine, and then you're moving on from there. Because as we know, right? That what is it? Generally, all the players, save for I think Cromwell reported Ricky White, have pretty much baseline NIL deals across the board.
Which I think, no matter who ends up being the like true blame, right? If Brendan Marion's the ultimate bad guy here, or if it's the agent, somehow it's a combination of both. This is still pretty rough for UNLV because what the general public is going to take from this is that they weren't willing to pay their starting quarterback $100,000, which is
I don't think
not,
that's true.
You don't think so?
I mean, I think if you read social media reaction, there is that.
I mean, it's split.
It's exactly. Yeah. So I think what is more damaging, if you will, and I'm doing the air quotes, is just that whatever happens from this as you move forward in this whole NIL thing, UNLV is always going to be brought up as like one of the key moments in which this happened, and that like they're going to always be at the start of this conversation. Saluka, UNLV, and what happens from here. And yeah, maybe it's a positive. Maybe now moving forward, written deals be part of it, blah, 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 whatever. Who knows? But I don't think it's that damaging because there is – like you said, it's very split. There is not one, you know, I was listening to the guys on SiriusXM. They seem to be very in the camp of like, how dare they not pay him? There's also people in the camp of just like, hey, look, you got to get that in writing. I don't know what's going on here. There's people that don't believe him. I think it's somewhat split in terms of how you're doing this. Honestly, if you've read these reports, like you said, if you're educated on this, the two people who take damage here, I don't think it's you and me. I think it's Marion and the agent.
But
that's the problem.
But I think what... if you're UNLV and I can take you back in time to last week, you know everything that's about to happen. Don't you find a way to find $100,000 in NIL money to avoid all of this? Would you pay $100,000 to avoid the last 2 days of Matt Saluka? Because that seems like a no-brainer to me.
I don't think it's a no-brainer because then you set the standard.
Of what? Brendan Marion, don't make promises you can't back up?
I mean, potentially, but like, what if, again, the problem with something like that is, was it a promise? Like, that's what it is, right? If they truly believe that it wasn't some sort of promise, if Marion's telling him, like, look, man, like, yeah, we talked about it, and like, we threw out, like, maybe we could do this, but there was never a handshake, spit in your hand, we'll get you that money, come to you, right? That, I think, is the crux of all of this. If they truly don't believe there was a agreement, this is the number, we will get it for you, then I think, like, yeah, then why would we do that?
Because it's your starting quarterback in the middle of the season asking for a fairly small amount of money in the world of NIL.
Your starting quarterback who you brought in after you brought in another guy who you thought actually could be a capable starter.
Right, and we'll get to that part of this,
No, too, but I think that does matter. If you don't want to set a standard of a quarterback doing this, if you have a team that you believe can compete and do all of these things around him, and you don't, like, again, I'm just running with the premise that they think that there was nothing solid, right? If you think that you're in the right here, why would you then do that just to buy the silence if you think you're, I mean, you, like, look at their statement, right? Their statement was, like, all of the, what was it, the threats or whatever?
They basically treated Saluka like a terrorist.
Yeah.
Like, they basically said, we don't negotiate with terrorists.
And
that's what their statement was yesterday.
If they truly believe that, why would you then acquiesce?
Because Barry Odom doesn't want to talk about this at all.
Sure, but that's not, again, you're setting a standard. Like, if you truly believe that there was nothing here, that there was no promise, then you're, why would you pony that up?
Because they've been the biggest story in college football for the last 2 days, and it's not a positive story for them.
But what I'm saying is I don't think that's worth it because, again, if it's not true, you're setting a standard that the squeaky wheel gets the oil, whatever the grease or whatever the term is, and that moving forward, other players can potentially do that here if there is nothing in place. And so now, if you're looking at it, because I think that is a factor, which is, okay, we believe that we did nothing wrong here. We also believe that we have a kid behind him who can play at the same level and have this happen. And we believe that once we move on from this, if we refuse to acquiesce to the agent and the family, that we're going to be able to play well, do what we still expect to do, and this is all going to be behind us because we believe we did nothing wrong. Like, I understand that if that is what they think.
I just think at the end of the day, you can separate pretty easily. Yeah, he's the starting quarterback. We're 3-0, and we've got a chance at the college football playoff. This will be the exception and not the standard going forward.
But yeah, I mean, you say that, but I don't think it's that easy. And I would also say, too, like, again, the play does factor in. He was good in the first few games, but we talked about it the week after I was here with you, the game after Kansas. It wasn't a great performance from him. And if you truly believe that a guy like Williams can still give you the same level of production, maybe in a different facet, get guys like White involved, whatever. Again, if you think you're right, I can understand why you wouldn't want to back down.
What a day.
Well, it's crazy.
UNLV's been the center of...
Isn't it great?
College football for 2 days.
Yeah, it was awesome.
We haven't even... They're in a new conference. And they're staying in the same conference. We haven't gotten to that yet.
Ah, whatever. Lump Summit. Who cares?
Lump Summit.
Yeah.
We haven't even gotten to that yet. Coming up next, UNLV staying in the Mountain West.
I thought the play went out of bounds. I thought the official put up his hand, stopping the clock. Obviously, I was wrong. Clock kept rolling. I looked up at it. I had heard that we had two calls into it. The coach to player communication went out between the OC and the quarterback, so he had to run over and get the call. And at that point, I was like, if I call a timeout now, how bad does that look? So this wasted like 13 seconds. So anyway, I looked because I knew the play call that was coming, the rotation of the secondary, that our players are going to go make it right, let it ride. And fortunately, they made a heck of a play.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right. Jeff Erickson's up next from RotoWire. If you've got fantasy questions, you can text him in now, 702-364-1100. That's the text line. Send him in. We'll ask Jeff Erickson. Short segment here, and I think Danny ruined what we're going to talk about because that was Barry Odom talking about the final play of the first half against Kansas where they let the clock run all the way down with two timeouts and then were lucky to score on a wheel route that was caught and then run into the end zone.
They weren't lucky. That was a good play call. Like everything, I think we talked about that. Everything post-snap was great. Everything pre-snap was not good.
But that answer from Barry Odom. Okay, you thought the guy was out of bounds. He wasn't. You misinterpreted the ref's hand signals.
That happens.
Okay. Right? Not great, but okay. For him to say, well, 12 seconds had run off the clock, and if I call a timeout right away, I'm going to look pretty bad, only to let another 12 seconds run off the clock. That's bad logic. Like, that's, you call the timeout right away.
Yeah, I'd have called the timeout. Like, you got two of them. I would have called the timeout. Like, I'm just looking stupid.
He would, but
it worked.
You already look stupid no matter what.
Not worth.
Like, you're 12 seconds stupid already. He looked another 12 seconds stupid by not calling one at all.
Nah, they knew it. They called it. Just like Belichick not calling the timeout against the Seahawks, right? You know, knew it the whole time.
Oh, Danny, I can't believe you made us talk about that again.
Lump sum, Mountain West, whatever.
Yeah,
who
yeah.
cares?
It's fine.
I got to add, two more teams?
I pulled that specifically for that soundbite. I wanted to see if you guys caught on to that wording.
Yeah, this is going to look dumb. All right, one other thing to mention from yesterday, another UNLV player.
Oh, this was so dumb.
Quit. Michael Allen is a running back on the team. He actually has 19 carries for 108 yards in three games.
A lot of that came very early. Well, really early Houston. Season, yes.
Yeah, he was the leading rusher against Houston.
Yes, he was.
But Michael Allen, he yesterday tweeted out that he is using his red shirt and quitting to preserve his year of eligibility. He just transferred in from NC State. He effectively said he's just not getting the playing time.
Effectively, it's exactly what he said.
Yeah. Well, he sent out one tweet that was very sort of, what's he talking about?
Yes. And then
he followed up and said, this is not about money. This is just about opportunities on the field.
Can I say really quickly? Look, this is the problem with social media. He tweets it out that he's leaving. The story picks up because everything going on with Sluka.
Right.
National spots like Bleacher Report and ESPN spinning it like, what's going on at UNLV? What a problem. And it's like, look at the snap count. Look at what was happening with him and his share of the workload from week one all the way up. Because he was slugged as starting running back, decides to leave too. It's like, please have an ounce of nuance when you're talking about these stories. And of course, what doesn't get picked up, his follow-up tweet, where he's like, guys, I had nothing to do with money. Like, I'm leaving.
I mean, give it 3 days. More guys might leave, and he could have been the starting running back for UNLV this weekend. But he's leaving, not related to money. He's not the only player to do this. USC actually had a player yesterday pull the same move, say, I'm not playing anymore. And by the way, one thing we didn't mention, the reason this is happening now is that you are allowed to play 4 games and still redshirt.
Mm-hmm.
So like in Sluka's case where it's money related, or in Michael Allen's case where it's playing time related, they can quit now and still play somewhere next season.
Yes.
Specifically for Sluka, he doesn't have another year of eligibility right. If he plays two more games.
So you could play 4 total, right, and still redshirt.
So he technically could have played this weekend.
So that's why one of my favorite things that I saw was like some of the responses when people were trying to trash Sluka. You could have at least played 1 more game a week.
Like, if he feels like he got slided, bro, right. Like, he's going to leave.
He,
like,
he thinks he's been robbed of $100,000.
Right. He's not going to play against Fresno State. It's great.
Stupid.
Also, one other thing that I saw a lot of, mainly from UNLV fans, was, like, the idea of, like, going down in history and, like, you got a chance at the college football playoff. UNLV's never been here before. Sluka does not care about that for 1 second.
Oh, yeah.
Like, not for a single second.
You have to think about it from his perspective. If he honestly feels like he was promised $100,000, like, yeah.
Which I believe he does. Like, I absolutely believe Sluka believes he was supposed to get $100,000 to play quarterback UNLV.
I don't know why I did that. But, like, in Sluka himself, yes. Yeah. I believe he feels like he was slighted.
Right.
Again, goes back to, I think you astutely pointed out, it is the two parties. It is the agent, it is Marion, and whatever disconnect happened there. But I believe that after whatever happened between those two, that was then translated to Sluka as in, you're going to get $100,000. Congrats, kid. You've worked hard for this. This is what you're going to get.
Right. And he didn't get it, and he said, all right, I'm not playing football for you anymore.
Yeah.
So, Matthew Sluka, not the quarterback of UNLV anymore. We'll get more into that in a little bit in the show, because I think John and I are going to agree a little bit on what UNLV looks like going forward and what it means for them actually winning
better
games. But now it's time for some fantasy football questions. Jeff Erickson of RotoWire, he is coming up next. Text line is 702-364-1100. If you have fantasy football questions, send them in now, 702-364-1100.
Need help in fantasy football? Got questions about your lineup? Don't worry. RotoWire's Jeff Erickson is here to help with your fantasy football needs.
702-364-1100. That is the text line. If you've got fantasy questions on who you should have in your lineup, somebody you want to pick up, trade opportunities, you can send those in now, and we will get Jeff's answers. Jeff, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. How you guys doing?
Fantastic. Let's start with the Miami Dolphins. How far are you downgrading each of the skill position players for Miami now that their quarterback position is looks like a disaster?
It's an unmitigated disaster. Maybe Tyler Huntley saves things. When you say that sentence, you know you're kind of you're ingesting all the hopium you can take. But I've got Tyreek down to 14, and I fear it's not far enough among wide receivers. I might move him down my next update of my rankings for the week. Waddles into the 20s. Achane might be the guy that can overcome that a little bit, but their offensive line's a problem too. So that's the one thing I worry about. But maybe, you know, home game against Tennessee will change things a little bit there. You're searching for a scenario there. Because, you know, and you're worried about long-term, too. We don't know if Tua is going to come back. I think that's the other thing. Even for, like, trade purposes, if you're in a trade league, it's not just this week. What do you do with Tyreek Hill? If someone offers me today, like DK Metcalf for Tyreek Hill, I'd probably take it.
I'm curious your thoughts on the Kansas City backfield now that Kareem Hunt has been activated the week after we saw Carson Steele get 17 carries.
I think it becomes a three-headed monster. I think Kareem Hunt does cut into it. It may not be as much as we think this week. You know, he was on the practice squad. They had to elevate him, basically, because some other team could have easily pushed him off the practice squad. So they kind of had to get him to the active roster. So it may be a case there where they kind of, you know, ease him in. But compare that versus Dallas and Dalvin Cook, who they're like, fine, go ahead and claim him. They can't get a running game, and Dalvin still can't make the active roster. So I think there is a difference there. I think Kareem Hunt will factor in. I think Steele will be the lead back, but there's only he's really a fullback. And there's, you know, yes, Mike Alstott existed, but there's very few guys that can succeed with the lack of speed.
Peyton Hillis won a Madden cover doing that. Hey, come on, what's going on? The most controversial.
Peyton Hillis ran a lot faster of a 40 than Carson Steele did. I still tell you that much.
I still think that Madden cover is the most fraudulent election we've had in our country. Let me just ask you, quarterback position. Do we believe in what we saw from Andy Dalton, and is he a good option against a Bengals defense, which looked abhorrent on Monday night?
Indeed, the matchup couldn't be better unless they're playing, you know, unless they're playing the Commanders, who I think might still be worse defensively. But I think, you know, it was base level confidence is what we saw out of Dalton. It's funny though; he's first quarterback, only quarterback this year that's had a 300-yard passing game with three passing touchdowns. Just says more about the league right now than anything else. I think it's a good start in a super flex league. Maybe if you've got Tua and you've been struggling to find a replacement, or you have Justin Herbert, he might be a good pivot. But like, I'd start Brock Purdy over him. I'd start Jared Goff over Dalton as well this week.
All right, wait, real quick. Oh. Well, I was just wondering, what does it say about the Raiders' defense that baseline competence got 36 dropped on them?
A lot of business decisions, I'm told, were being made out there. So we'll leave it at that.
All right. Here's some questions. Again, 702-364-1100. That is the text line. If you've got questions for Jeff Erickson, you can send them in now. First one's from Samuel. He's in a full PPR league. He needs a flex play between Najee Harris or Zay Flowers. He also says he has Derrick Henry as a running back starter. Is it smart to play both Ravens?
No, you're definitely starting Henry regardless. So it's not the worst thing in the world to have a wide receiver from the same team. I think it's a close call between Harris and Flowers. I watched to see if Harris has any limitation of practice today and tomorrow. You know, there's reports about him having his arm in a sling on Monday, but then they kind of, you know, hand-waved that away. So I think I'd probably go Harris because I really like the matchup against the Colts. I know they stopped the Bears running game last week, but I think that's more a Bears-specific issue. The first 2 weeks they were a run funnel. So and we know that's what the Steelers want to do.
Jerry's got a couple of questions. First one from Jerry: need three Amari Cooper, George Pickens, or Khalil Shakir?
Oh,
I'm sorry, and Juwan Jennings. I missed that one. Yeah, need three, and Juwan Jennings is in there too.
Oh man, this is a good problem to have. I think Jennings is the sit, but it's really close. If you wanted to make a case for Shakir against the Ravens, I could see it too. But Shakir seems to me to be emerging as Josh Allen's first choice among equals. So I think it's clear that, you know, you're going to have a good problem every week with this grouping.
Jerry also wants to know, he needs two of these three: Christian Kirk, Xavier Worthy, or Tony Pollard.
I'm starting Pollard. So it comes down to Kirk versus Worthy. I would probably go with I'd go with Kirk. I think the Texans secondary is actually a little exploitable. Kirk showed some signs of life in the Monday night debacle.
Here's a fun one: Travis Kelce or Isaiah Likely?
Kelce, but man, it just shows where we're at so far. Tight end has just been an unmitigated disaster too. Just doing my rankings every week. Okay, who's my number one this week? It's not Kelce, but. I don't find a ready replacement. Likely has actually been frustrating in the last 2 weeks.
Also from Justin, for a flex spot, Jacoby Myers or Cortland Sutton?
I go Sutton, number one target on this team. There's some worry about him getting, like, I don't know if Sauce travels to stay with Sutton the whole time, but I think I can get Sutton there in terms of volume.
Aiden wants to know, a quarterback question for you: Anthony Richardson or Sam Darnold?
Oh, come on.
And another one there where it's like, this shows how the season's gone sideways, right? I'm going to go Richardson, but the fact that we're asking the question illustrates a ton. I think Richardson's legs will still get him the fantasy points, though.
Kirk Cousins or Daniel Jones?
Kirk Cousins. Daniel Jones, I think against this Cowboys pass rush, I think it's going to be ugly tonight.
Here's a nice one from Chris: Jahmyr Gibbs or Brian Robinson Jr.?
I go Jahmyr Gibbs. I guess if you drafted Gibbs at the 1-2 turn, you don't want to be asking that question. But They're still getting Gibbs creative ways to find the ball. So go Gibbs here.
From Ray, Chuba Hubbard or T. Higgins?
I'm going to go Chuba Hubbard. I think for one more week, at least, before Brooks comes back, assuming Brooks comes back off the NFI list on week five where he's first eligible, I think he'll start to share carries. But this week, Hubbard gets him, and the Bengals, as we've illustrated, are a really good target.
Sean has an open-ended one here. What do we do with Kelsey?
You keep playing him. You can't trade him now because he's at the bottom of his value. You're not going to bench him. So you just play him and hope it turns around. I think we're in that way with a lot of the top tight ends.
Steven wants to know, Garrett Wilson or J.K. Dobbins?
Garrett Wilson. I think it's going to be tough sliding again for Dobbins this week against the Chiefs. Guys, I still don't think Herbert should play. They have the bye next week. Mm-hmm. I understand it's a big division rivalry game, but it's a high ankle sprain. They told us that part. Yet they're like, oh, he can play through and all that, you know, and they admire his toughness. But he was clearly compromised. He aggravated it last week. When he's hurt, it brings down the entire offense, including Dobbins. So I don't start Dobbins this week.
Jordan wants to know, George Pickens or Rashad White?
George Pickens.
Are you a believer in Bucky Irving taking over that backfield?
I think he'll continue to cut into a share of time. I think it will be still a split on time. You'll still see White in on passing downs. Irving's the better runner right now. I think that's pretty clear.
Jason wants one for a flex spot. Rome Odunze, Greg Dortch, or Brock Bowers?
I go Rome. I understand it's pretty close between Rome and Bowers, to be honest. The fact that they were talking about using Aiden O'Connell as injecting some life into the team, I mean, those two things don't equate. I mean, it just shows where they're at right now, just feeling for solutions. But Bowers is still great. He's still going to get a ton of targets. So I'm going to go Bowers over Rome. I'm going to pivot on that one there. I would go Bowers. Keenan Allen started practicing yesterday, so it might be a three-headed monster in the Bears' wideout room.
Almost like the head coach is grasping at straws for solutions.
yes, almost.
Texans backfield, Damian Pierce or Cam Akers?
You're going to have to play this one down to the wire there in terms of the practice report. If Pierce is healthy, he starts over Akers, though.
Here's a great one from Ryan. Should I consider benching Jalen Hurts and starting Andy Dalton this week?
Oh, man, no.
Another quarterback one, Anthony Richardson or Derek Carr?
I'm going to go Anthony Richardson. Derek Carr one thing that happened to the Saints against the Eagles is they lost their center, Eric McCoy, early in that game, and it just destroyed everything they have going on. Anytime, if you do live betting and a team's starting center goes down, you may want to try to start to fade that team's offense. It changes everything about, the blitz pickup, the blocking schemes. It just wrecks a team. And I understand now they have a week of practice to adjust and all that. I still think that also you had a lot of familiarity with the Falcons. I think this might be a tough week for the Saints offense.
All right, last one for you from Ryan, who is going to send you this type of question every week. With Bo Nix having the best rookie QBR of the season, should I start him over Josh Allen?
Well, first of all, it's not true because Jaden Daniels exists. But no, you should not.
All right, Jeff Erickson from RotoWire. Jeff, thank you for putting up with the Bo Nix questions every week. They will not stop until he gets benched. Thanks, Jeff.
No problem. My pleasure.
So there is Jeff Erickson from RotoWire, always here to answer your fantasy football questions.
You missed one from John VT.
Is Anthony Richardson getting benched?
No, it was actually Aaron Rodgers or Anthony Richardson.
Ah, okay. Oh, boy. You have Anthony Richardson on your fantasy team, too?
In my guillotine league.
Oh, boy. Well, you don't have to worry about losing him.
No. He's still pretty good.
Is he?
I like how we forget week one. The last 2 weeks were not great. Week one was still very good and is a third of the sample size so far.
Panic time. 3 weeks in, it's panic time.
Tell you what, I think it's panic time when you have a quarterback Will Levis. You still have some upside.
That was panic time before the season started.
He's bad.
Yeah, and we knew he was bad.
You at least still have the upside still here and there with Richardson. Yeah, you see it.
Right, but we knew,
absolute dot to my boy Alec Pierce at the beginning of that game.
The entire offseason.
Dropping dimes like he got holes in his pocket.
I kept making the comment, the Raiders have the worst quarterback room in the NFL, not because they have the worst quarterbacks, but because there's no real future upside, plus they're bad now. And I always had to correct myself and say, and the Titans. because Levis is bad and there's basically no future upside there either.
Trying to remember, who's their backup?
Well, it's not Malik Willis because they traded him and then lost to him, which is the funniest thing that's happened in the NFL so far this season. I can't remember who
that is. That's competent coaching is what that is, Mason Rudolph.
But it's still funny. Yeah. Oh, God, Mason Rudolph.
Inject some life into that offense.
Oh, God. All right, coming up next here on ESPN Las Vegas, we're going to get back into UNLV football.
Jackson requested, he talked to me, and he said, maybe I could put a word in with you. He said, can he get some reps in the return game so he can get it into the end zone?
You saw on the onside kick when he tried to scoop it up.
I did.
That was selfish. He knows it. I know it. The American people know it. That was selfish. And he knows better than that. But you know what? We do have some things built in that he may see the field at some point this year on offense.
Now, back to the press box on ESPN Las Vegas.
Throw him the ball. By the way, UNLV's offense, probably the worst offense in the entire country to put a defensive player in to give the ball to.
Are you talking about Jackson Woodard?
Yeah, he's talking about Jackson Woodard. Like, the whole point of the offense is we've got seven skill position guys we want to give the ball to.
Speed, speed, speed.
But we're going to bring in Jackson Woodard to give him the ball? That sounds like the worst offense to do it.
Feels like the antithesis of the go-go offense.
Yeah, it's a little not great. Jackson Woodard, by the way, do you think he thought Haj Malik Williams should have been starting the whole time? Because there was a tweet that said Haj Malik Williams was QB1, and Woodard responded with, "Bout time."
Yes.
So am I, like, I read that and think, he thought he should have been the starter since week one?
I think so. I mean, look, so I saw that too, and I retweeted, I was just like, in, just in case, like, you're wondering what the locker room's thinking, right? Which is, it seems pretty clear that you, because here's the thing, and maybe we're doing too much reading into things. You can simply just go, our guy, right? Like, can't wait to play behind. You know what I mean? Just one of those generic messages.
Yeah.
When you throw in the bout time, that at least insinuates some sort of either one, you thought he should have won the job, or just some sort of anti-Sluka thought, whatever that is.
Right. It's not just pro-Haj Malik
Williams.
Yes,
there is some anti the guy that was there before. To what degree, whatever. And maybe he didn't mean it by that, but when you put something out there like that, I mean, maybe you're just trying to be supportive. Yeah, that seems to be the case. But the team, like, does. Cofield was on with us on VSiN yesterday. We were talking about it. And he brought up the fact that when Odom in the team meeting brought the two guys up and said, here, your two quarterbacks, like, the room exploded. They seem very, very supportive of the guys, whatever. So there seems to be a very positive upswell from the team by all accounts.
Wait a minute. Odom still isn't making the quarterback decision? He brought both of them up and said, this is
the way Cofield presented it was just like, these are our two guys. Like, these are our guys, essentially. Like, I don't think he was saying, like, either one of them could start.
Okay.
I think Williams is starting. I think he's just, like, showing, like, hey, here's the guys that are still here. You know what I mean? Like, support your quarterbacks. Because now, you have Haj Malik Williams is very athletic. We know what he can do. I know you want to talk about that later, but it is now a little bit more on the onus of Friel, which is you have a running quarterback who is somewhat slight in terms of his weight and whatnot. There is a chance we see more Cam Friel because he could have more thrust upon his shoulders too. So I think it's just important to say, like, here are your two guys now, you know, your starter, your backup, whatever. We're riding with these guys.
I
don't think he was doing the or.
I think it was. I think he actually had somebody cut out or
right,
about a poster board and hold it in between them. It was actually, here are your two quarterbacks that Brennan Marion didn't promise $100,000 to. Let's go try to beat Fresno State. But obviously, we haven't seen Haj Malik Williams throw a pass at the FBS level. His FCS passing numbers were better than Matthew Sluka's at Holy Cross. I don't know enough about their level of competition they're playing to know if that's justified, similar, way different. But the FCS passing numbers were better than Sluka's. Sluka didn't complete 50% of his passes in a single game this season. Still crazy that happened, and they are 3-0. I don't think UNLV gets worse going to Haj Malik Williams. They might play Fresno State, and he also can't complete 50% of his passes, and he doesn't run like Sluka, and they're in a lot of trouble. But I'm expecting the passing game to be better and the quarterback run game to be much worse. It's just a matter of how much better I think the passing game could be that determines if this offense is better, worse, or the same with Haj Malik Williams.
I would agree. I also think, too, to supplement some of the, hey, maybe our running game from the quarterback position is not going to be great. It's like, all right, well, let's lean on our running game more, right? In terms of these running backs and the ability to generate that. But I also think that Williams, from the little bit that I've seen, is capable of running. I just don't think he's capable of doing what Doncic, because Sluka Doncic, what Sluka was capable, which was, like, he would get the snap and just pull it down and just go, let's find something, right? And then, you know, finish through guys, do whatever. That's probably not going to be there. But the escapability, the ability to extend plays, and I think the big difference is that, because the ability to extend plays but also remain a passer and find some guys downfield when those plays break down, I think that's going to provide a different wrinkle that generally was not there with Sluka.
If Haj Malik Williams does exactly that at a high level, why didn't they pick him to start? Like, that's good. Like, if he can extend plays with his feet but also deliver the ball down the field while doing so, that's, like,
I mean,
one of the big traits that you want out of a quarterback that makes them different from the average quarterback.
I mean, look, I'm not going to say that I was at every single practice watching them, so we don't know what they saw and why they made the decision that they did.
Well, they promised $100,000 and not the other one.
Sure.
So.
I mean, maybe. But if he goes out there and shows it, but I would agree generally with you, and to bring this to, like, at least a number value. Like, the betting market thought that this was a 4-point spread before the Sluka news.
In favor of UNLV.
Swung all the way to Fresno State -1.5, which was ridiculous. It's right back up to, like, -1.5, too. Market says there's, like, a 1.5-point difference through a key number. I would say that's still pretty strong.
The one thing on that, I don't think Haj Malik Williams is going to be significantly worse than Sluka. I think there's a chance he's better. The intangible side of it is, like, does this negatively impact the team?
Sure.
Like,
but I also think, we talked about this with Grimaldo when I was with you guys last week, I think what's being lost in all of this is their defense is pretty good.
Yeah. It's been the best that we've seen, much better than we expected at the start of the year. I think they're going to be just fine going forward. They still might lose to Fresno State. They might have lost to him with Sluka, but I don't think this is going to have some irreparable damage on the season. And, oh my God, they can't go to the playoffs because Sluka's gone and Haj Malik Williams is in.